Our next speaker is a living fantasy author. We're going to have Cyril Mukulrana come speak to us. She's the author of a forthcoming epic fantasy trilogy called The Dawn of the Firebird, and she's the acclaimed author of the novel Hope Ablaze. And she's an infill candidate right here at Oxford, and she explores the intersection of policy and human rights, and her debut novel was selected as the Library Mikhail Threet's debut book club pick and earned a Junior Library Guild Gold Star Standard. So please welcome Sarah to come talk to us about Jinn Faith and Oral Folklore, Decentering Fantasy Outside Christian Allegories.
Just, you guys can hear me. Okay, awesome. I think the greatest injustice in how we talk about stories today is that both we and our stories are constricted by the Western canon. And we're actually wrongfully assuming that the Western canon is the only way to tell a story through the archetypes of Judeo-Christian traditions. Even the way that we structure our plot is circumscribed. Think of the hero's journey when you're actually telling a story. It's a model that's treated as quite universal, when in reality, it's only one type of cultural imagination. So today, I want to challenge you. I want to challenge you to imagine differently, because only then can we get richer stories. And in my talk today, I'll be using Northrop Frye's academic theory, where he assumes that all of literature, and now by extension fantasy literature, comes from biblical frameworks. And I'm going to challenge that. I remember sitting in class when I was listening to this theory, and I was quite baffled because I was like, this is not something that I subscribe myself to as a writer. And as I came to write my book, Dawn of the Firebird, I had to use a lot of the assumptions that I was told was the only way to tell a story, and I had to tell myself to resist that and tell it the way that I thought was right. And so in Northrop Frye's theory, he argues that the Bible provides the central mythological framework of Western literature. Fantasy authors like C.S. Lewis leaned into this by reshaping biblical typology into critical allegories. I reject that notion through two subpoints. Firstly, I say that lore and motifs do not have to exist in Frye's mythological structure. I again used a case study of my novel, Dawn of the Firebird. And critically, the rich world within my book draws on Islamicate lore, cosmology, different types of angels, jinn, and demons. And I challenge a lot of the assumptions that exist for those types of mythological existence, because a lot of that is derived from biblical frameworks. Okay. As I said, Frye's theory in Anatomy of Criticism identifies recurring motifs as central to Western myth. So for Frye, the Christian allegory, especially the typologies, anchors in different types of motifs, such as comedy, romance, and even the tragic hero. These stories are seen as extensions of biblical forms. So a lot of times the Trinity is actually quite critical to these books. He also displaces biblical forms, even if, you know, different fantasy books exist and they say they draw on different types of mythos. He still argues that all of those books orbit the biblical framework. So he would argue that Lewis obviously re-represents the biblical myth in the fantasy genre, but he actually puts that argument even more, saying that any type of literature and story, even if it's fantasy, even if it's not, is an extension of the Bible. So obviously with C.S. Lewis, the Christ figure Aslan is Frye's archetype of death and resurrection. How do I challenge that? A couple key ways. Firstly, in Dawn of the Firebird, I develop motifs that disrupt Frye's system. Frye's explanation of biblical archetypes like the fall, resurrection, the Trinity, and a Christ figure he sees as universal. In Dawn, I split that complex spectrum as different moral possibilities by challenging the idea of a fall, resurrection plurality. So, as I said, Frye sees angels and demons as displaced archetypes of the Bible. A lot of times in stories, a classic story, you see light versus dark, you see good versus evil. In Islamicate lore, in my book, I take a lot of the assumptions of these motifs and give it the lens of Islam. So angels exist within my book, but they're not the same angels like the devil that fell from heaven and was a fallen angel. Instead, in Islam, we see angels as flawless servants of God. So in my book, I put that idea and I show that angels are not the same type of fallen archetype that you see within biblical frameworks. Similarly, you have the idea of demons or dark forces. That exists within Dawn of the Firebird, but we have the idea of jinn. Those are smokeless fire beings that have free will, they still have souls, but they embody morally goodness, morally badness, and ambiguity and temptation. So they're actually quite similar to humans. They could be devils, but they can also be good beings. There's three other motifs that I challenge. So Fry argues that death is another type of allegory within storytelling. Death is obviously seen as a destructive force. It's something the character must overcome. And when a character dies, that's the end of their journey. Well, within Dawn, I actually challenge that. For example, death is actually seen as a sacred tradition within my book. In the fantasy world, martyrdom is actually seen as a pinnacle of the hero's journey. So if you die as a hero or you die in martyrdom, it's seen as, you know, accessing some type of higher, I guess, intellectual, soul, spiritual reality. It's also a way to access divine justice within my book. So morally good characters revere death because it's where heroes edge closer to the fulfillment of the hero cycle. Similarly, I draw on the story of Adam and Eve, a classic story within the Bible, and obviously Fry sees it through the biblical framework. Well, within Dawn of the Firebird, I challenge the story of Adam and Eve. I look at it through Islam's interpretation of that story within the Quran or other Abrahamic traditions. So within my book, I do take the story of Adam and Eve, but I actually draw on the classic symbol of death, which is the raven, because the raven taught Adam's son how to bury the first murder of mankind, and I actually use raven as a cultural symbol to accept and revere death within my world. As I was saying, there are other types of archetypes that exist. Fry obviously assumes that canon and literature can only be told through written script. But I actually challenge that within Dawn of the Firebird, because for us to assume that literature in the canon can only exist in written script or be passed down through written script is a critical assumption, because that's not how most canon outside of the Western canon exists. So within my book, I actually celebrate oral storytelling. In my world, tradition and culture is passed down through oral storytelling. And so Fry's model kind of enforces this archetype. His second key motif is actually Noah's flood. He looks at the flood as this big kind of divine justice event. He also has other motifs like trees, gardens, even the idea of an apocalypse. It's seen as an imaginative power that supersedes and goes into other types of literature. So if you read other books, he actually sees every book representing those types of motifs. Within Dawn of the Firebird, Noah's flood also exists, but it exists again through Islam's interpretation of Noah's flood. Instead of a big giant flood that was a source of divine punishment, in Dawn of the Firebird, Noah's flood, is seen as a localized flood and a kind of cleansing. So this story that I wrote exists to tell a different account than the Bible's interpretation, and it challenges Fry's assumption that all stories must come from the biblical canon. So critically, what I want you to take away by this presentation is, what is the point of talking about stories that exist outside of biblical frameworks? Why am I challenging Fry's theory? Well, I want you to think about one of the most famous academics who was a Pan-African sociologist. Du Bois talks about the idea of double consciousness, and I want you to take that into your writing if you're a writer or even your reading. It's a sense of seeing oneself through the eyes of a dominant culture. Decentering is about claiming authority to imagine differently. For example, when I was working on Dawn of the Firebird, my lovely editor Vicky, who's in the audience, was the one who gave me permission, and I needed to hear it, to be able to imagine and challenge the cultures that I'm writing into my book. I didn't have to derive it from something that already exists in the real world. I had the permission to imagine differently and to draw on, yes, my own religion and other types of cultural traditions without being an exotic oriental supplement. So if you're writing, especially if you're interested in cultures outside the biblical canon, then I actually implore you to do that, and I implore you to decenter a lot of that. Secondly, what's important is Western readers imagine myth only exists again in those biblical archetypes, but the critical harm of that is that you sideline thousands and thousands of other traditions that exist in the canon. So if my stories are being rejected because they go outside those frameworks, that's not fair to the stories that can otherwise exist. And it actually probably makes you a worse writer or a worse reader, because you're only limiting yourself to one construct. And so what I want you to take away by this presentation is that you need to give yourself the permission to imagine differently, because only then can fantasy be a genre that blooms. Fantasy is beautiful because it's a veil to imagine and look at different moral spectrums, to look at different types of traditions, and even the way that they have different value systems. And only then will you be able to enjoy fantasy as a genre it is. Thank you.
Hello, that was an incredible presentation, so thank you so much. I just want to say that first. I'm wondering about mythology that predates the biblical canon and kind of your perspective on how even the biblical canon itself almost draws upon that in a way, and how, I guess, seeing it as a three-part of before the biblical canon and after, sort of how the biblical canon itself has changed due to translations and kind of just the culture that has surrounded it, and how it has become from something that was so intertwined into Middle Eastern culture and all of that. Sorry, this is like so convoluted.
Yeah, no.
And I how it has become like extremely Western in its culture, I guess.
Yeah. So I think you point out something that's important, which is obviously the Bible wasn't the first book or written script to exist. Obviously, there were other types of religious cultures, Abrahamic traditions, Judaism, Jainism, Buddhism, and I actually studied a lot of different scriptures from Buddhism in particular when I was writing Dawn, because Dawn takes place after Noah's flood, and I couldn't just rely on the Bible or Islam. I had to try to look at different types of monotheistic cultures that existed before it. But you point to something which is important, which is that a lot of times people assume these stories only came and existed in the Bible. But obviously there are other scriptures that exist that have similar types of motifs, similar types of archetypes, or imagine the story of Noah's flood, Adam and Eve, differently. One example I'll give is, if you look at proto-China, for example, they actually worshipped a deity called Di. It was a monotheistic deity. And if you look at monotheistic cultures, they studied and have similar types of kind of monotheistic, I guess, a divine-like figure. And those have existed for like millennia. And so one way that we can try to stop the watering down of these stories, as you said, and stop them from being only seen as Western, is for you just to write. I wrote something in Noah's flood instead of something that takes place vaguely during Islamic period or in the Middle East, because I was like, I don't need to be constructed to the Middle East or South Asia. I'm allowed to write a story that takes place after Noah's flood. And so you can actually combat a lot of that watering down by giving yourself permission to write those stories that take place in Adam's time or in some made-up world that takes place in the very beginning of human existence. If you try to limit yourself and look at historical sources and be like, oh, I must only write like that, you're limiting yourself. And so I really, you know, with the wonderful support of my team, was only able to do that because they accepted that story in its most original form.
I would just say thank you very much, Sarah, for a fantastic talk. You've really moved us onto the next stage of the summer school. And thanks to all the speakers as well.